Looking better, Mike. Thank you. Well, thank you to Dave for leading us thus far in worship this morning. To avoid any distractions, I think I should probably begin by explaining why I am here preaching and not Jean. If you were here last week as she led, you'll have heard Jean allude to the fact that life has been challenging for their family recently, and unfortunately those struggles are ongoing for them. Jean had hoped to be able to preach this week, and indeed had prepared to come and preach this week, for which I'm very grateful because she shared that with me. But she realized that it wasn't going to be possible for her to deliver a sermon on a passage which is hard-hitting for us all. And so now you know, and hopefully won't be distracted, and you've also been warned that this is a difficult passage in places. So we're continuing our series this morning, looking at Jeremiah, Living with Hope, looking at the words that Jeremiah was called to bring to the people of Israel. And we have an opportunity this morning to look at a great chapter, one that's got so much in it, and we've been given this title, Worship with Integrity. And we're going to look through that word together. And if you've got your Bible with you, please do open it up and turn to Jeremiah. We're looking at chapter 7. And if you haven't and you'd like one, the stewards at the back have got a shelf full of Bibles, and they would love to give you one if you'd like to follow through. So put your hand up if you want, and the stewards will bring you a Bible. It will really help you to follow through. And we're going to look in three different sections, because that's how the reading seems to break up this morning. We're going to look at an appeal, a warning, and the judgment. An appeal, a warning, and the judgment. And so hopefully that will show you where we're going as we look through today. Now I have to say, I'd wondered at this point about walking down to the back of the church and delivering the rest of this message from by the doors where Dennis is sat, because I thought that that might be in the spirit of this message that Jeremiah was given. Because he was given the message and told, stand at the gate of the Lord's house and there proclaim the message. And I thought maybe that would get it into your heads that's what he was told. But then I thought perhaps 3 weeks ago I exhausted your capacity for the unusual. And I'm following on from Dave as well and his sirens. So perhaps I'll just stay here. And we'll keep it simpler. So I thought better of it. But I will read those words that were given to those people as they entered in through that gate of the temple. So I'm going to read together now, and this is from Jeremiah chapter 7, and we're beginning at verse 1. This is the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Stand at the gate of the Lord's house, and there proclaim this message. Hear the word of the Lord, all you people of Judah, who come through these gates to worship the Lord. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Reform your ways and your actions, and I will let you live in this place. Do not trust in deceptive words and say, this is the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. If you really change your ways and your actions and deal with each other justly, if you do not oppress the alien, the fatherless or the widow, and do not shed innocent blood in this place, and if you do not follow other gods to your own harm, then I will let you live in this place, in the land I gave to your forefathers forever and ever. But look, you are trusting in deceptive words that are worthless. You are trusting in deceptive words that are worthless. I want to begin by asking us the question, who was this message delivered to? Because if we miss that, then we miss the whole point of this passage that we've got to look at together. Because this message was delivered not on the street corner, not to wider society, but it was delivered to the people on their way in to the temple, the worshipping people of God. This was some 2,600 years ago, a mind-boggling number. But people were coming into worship in the temple in Jerusalem. And this is who the message was to. God said clearly, stand at the gate and there proclaim this message. And what was the message that Jeremiah was told to bring? What was this that we've read? Well, this little part here says this. Don't think that by coming into this special building and by superstitiously kind of saying special words that it makes you right with God. Because it isn't and it doesn't. You see, what the people were doing was they were just getting on with living lives however they reckoned was the right way for them. And then they'd come to the temple and they thought, well, we're okay here. This is where God's presence dwells. So if we come in here, then we can kind of say, well, it's the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. I'm okay. But they were kidding themselves. They were trusting in deceptive words that were worthless. God was looking much deeper than they had any concept for. And friends, I'm sure it's not an enormous leap for you, even without me standing at the door at the back, to realize that one application here is that this message is also to us. Those of us coming into worship at Bromsgrove Baptist Church today. Because this message was about those who were coming into worship. And God's name has been worshipped for more than 2,600 years. But the message is the same to us as it was to the people then. Don't just think that by coming here, by sitting and standing at the right times, and maybe even singing the songs or putting some money in the bag, maybe saying amen in the right places, don't think that doing those things will make you right with God. I'm sorry, it just won't. Let me say that again. Please don't think that just by coming here to this act of worship and appearing to take part will do anything of itself to make you right with God, because it won't. Now, if that makes you feel uncomfortable, please don't stop listening. The message goes on. It perhaps gets harder before there is hope. Let's read on. A warning, verses 9 to 15. Will you steal and murder, commit adultery and perjury, burn incense to Baal and follow other gods you have not known? And then come and stand before me in this house which bears my name and say, we are safe. Safe to do all these detestable things? Has this house which bears my name become a den of robbers to you? But I have been watching, declares the Lord. Go now to the place in Shiloh where I first made a dwelling for my name, and see what I did to it because of the wickedness of my people Israel. While you were doing all these things, declares the Lord, I spoke to you again and again, but you did not listen. I called to you, but you did not answer. Therefore, what I did to Shiloh, I will now do to the house that bears my name, the temple you trust in, the place I gave to you and your fathers. I will thrust you from my presence, just as I did all your brothers, the people of Ephraim. And so, a warning. I have been watching, declares the Lord. I will thrust you from my presence, just as I did your brothers. Now, we need a quick bit of history here, perhaps, to help our understanding. I confess that despite having been one of those people who did preach a sermon in 1 Samuel, when I read Shiloh, I thought, what's that? Haven't really heard of it ever, but perhaps I should have done. But here we go for a quick history brief. Some 450 years earlier, Jerusalem wasn't part of the people of God. It was still a small city in the hands of those who dwelt there before King David and the people of Israel arrived and took it over to be a capital. Shiloh was the place. God's presence dwelt amongst the people over the Ark of the Covenant, which was in the Ark of the Covenant, which was there, held at Shiloh. And that's where, if you remember back to the story, the boy Samuel, the child of Hannah, whom she so loved, and she presented to God, it was there in Shiloh that Samuel grew up in the tabernacle, serving God under the priest Eli. So 450 years before this passage that we're reading, and about that time, the Israelites went out to fight the Philistines. They were the big enemies of the time. And they went out in their own strength. And they took a big defeat. The Israelites weren't really used to facing big defeats at the hands of their enemies. And they had this bright idea. They thought, we know what's wrong. We didn't have God with us. So what did they do? They went up and they fetched the Ark of the Covenant from the tabernacle in Shiloh, and they said, what we need to do is take God with us to the battle. So they took the ark, and they went again to fight the Philistines. And it was a disaster. They were defeated. Shiloh was destroyed. The Ark of the Covenant was captured. Once again, they made the same mistake, a mistake in their history. They weren't trusting in God. They were trusting in the superstitious, the magical kind of presence of God that the ark represented for them then. And so here in this passage, God says, look back in your history. You know these stories. Look back and realize that you're making the same mistake again. That now you're linking the temple, this kind of magical presence of God that you're relying on, thinking that it makes everything all right. But it doesn't. Because God says what you're doing is forgetting your lifestyle. You're forgetting that your life, both inside and outside the temple, was what mattered to God. And God saw their sin, and he was displeased. He saw the people here in this passage running after other gods and worshipping them. And God said, worship only me. I am the only true God. And he saw them mistreating each other, stealing and murdering, committing adultery, lying to each other. He said, you've done all these things, and I keep calling you back, but you're not coming. They weren't living out the loving plans that God the Creator had for his people. Plans for their welfare and for their delight. And so God says, like their northern brothers, whom 150 years earlier had been carried off into Assyrian exile, the people of Ephraim, God says to you, my remaining people in the south, you're to be ejected from God's presence here in Jerusalem. You will be carried off by the new superpower, the Babylonians, who are coming and will carry you off. A warning that comes to us from the people that Jeremiah spoke to. And again, you won't be surprised, will you, to know that God sees our lives outside of this building too. He doesn't just see us when we consciously come here to meet with him. He sees every aspect of our lives. And what does he see? Does he find in us lives of humility, of forgiveness, of love? Does he find a love for God with all of our heart and soul and mind and strength? Does he find a love for our neighbor ahead of our own interests? And then he looks deeper within us to our emotions, to our thoughts, to our motivations. He knows it all. He knows us all. And suddenly, worship with integrity is looking a bit tricky, because we're realizing that worship is about all of our lives. It's not just about here and on a Sunday morning. In her preparations, Jean had written this, and it captured my thoughts. We cannot say that we love God and not show love to others. We cannot come into this place and sing love songs to God and sing about his love if we are not practicing loving others. All of those who God brings into our lives. Treating all of them equally and fairly. Paying particular attention to those who are vulnerable. Poor, physically or spiritually. Considering other needs before our own. How this passage calls us to love and serve with passion. But we're not there yet, and perhaps we come to the most distressing part of this passage, because this is where we read about the judgment that is coming. But a bit like maybe the background on my slide there, it's a grey, dull, horrible thing, but there are some rays of light that come. Watch for them as we read through this. We're going to read through the rest of the passage, a longer part this time. And so God's talking to Jeremiah, it seems, as an aside, as he says, "So do not pray for this people, nor offer any plea or petition for them. Do not plead with me, for I will not listen to you. Do you not see what they are doing in the towns of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem? The children gather wood, the fathers light the fire, and the women knead the dough and make cakes of bread for the Queen of Heaven. They pour out drink offerings to other gods to provoke me to anger. But am I the one they are provoking, declares the Lord? Are they not rather harming themselves to their own shame?" This is what the Sovereign Lord says, "My anger and my wrath will be poured out on this place, on man and beast, on the trees of the field and on the fruit of the ground, and it will burn and not be quenched. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says, go ahead. Add your burnt offerings to your other sacrifices and eat the meat yourselves. For when I brought your forefathers out of Egypt and spoke to them, I did not just give them commands about burnt offerings and sacrifices, but I gave them this command. Obey me, and I will be your God, and you will be my people. Walk in all the ways I command you, that it may go well with you." But they did not listen or pay attention. Instead, they followed the stubborn inclinations of their evil hearts. They went backward and not forward. From the time your forefathers left Egypt until now, day after day, again and again, I sent you my servants, the prophets. But they did not listen to me or pay attention. They were stiff-necked and did more evil than their forefathers. When you tell them all this, they will not listen to you. When you call to them, they will not answer. Therefore say to them, this is the nation that has not obeyed the Lord its God or responded to correction. Truth has perished. It has vanished from their lips. Cut off your hair and throw it away. Take up the lament on the barren heights. For the Lord has rejected and abandoned this generation that is under his wrath. The people of Judah have done evil in my eyes, declares the Lord. They have set up their detestable idols in the house that bears my name and have defiled it. They have built the high places of Topheth in the valley of Ben-Hinnom to burn their sons and daughters in the fire. Something I did not command, nor did it ever enter my mind. So beware. The days are coming, declares the Lord, when people will no longer call it Topheth or the valley of Ben-Hinnom, but the valley of slaughter. For they will bury the dead in Topheth until there is no more room. Then the carcasses of this people will become food for the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and there will be no one to frighten them away. I will bring an end to the sounds of joy and gladness, and to the voices of bride and bridegroom in the towns of Judah and the streets of Jerusalem, for the land will become desolate. At that time, declares the Lord, the bones of the kings and officials of Judah, the bones of the priests and prophets, and the bones of the people of Jerusalem will be removed from their graves. They will be exposed to the sun and the moon and all the stars of heaven, which they have loved and served, and which they have followed and consulted and worshipped. They will not be gathered up or buried, but will be like refuse, lying on the ground. Wherever I banish them, all the survivors of this evil nation will prefer death to life, declares the Lord Almighty. It's not pretty, is it? It's not easy to hear. Not what you'd choose. But there are glimpses here of our Father's great love. This is not a vengeful God, quick to anger. In verse 25 it says there, day after day, again and again, I sent you my servants. God's been patient. He's called them back again and again. He's given them examples from history that they should not repeat. But eventually, there can come a day when, despite God's reaching out to us, he says, look, if there's a persistent refusal to come into my loving arms, then God reluctantly draws the line of enduring separation from him. And that is the day of judgment. So where have we got to? Well, I want to offer you a few pictures, some pictures that you may have seen before, as something of a summary of this passage, the way I feel I've seen it as I've read it. And if you look at the pictures here and follow them from left to right, like a storybook, then we see that God made people to live on the earth under his authority, the authority of God. But people sinned. And they chose to take the authority themselves and to reject God's kingship. They chose not to live in God's way. And they trusted in the wrong things, perhaps outwardly seeming to do religion. But in fact, they were just getting on and living however they pleased, what worked best for them. But as we've seen, this brings about a judgment. An ultimate, final, enduring separation from the God who is King and cannot be crossed out. And I think that's a summary of the passage that we've looked at. But friends, we don't live 2,600 years ago, and we know that the story did not end there, because God stepped in. But God. One of those great moments. But God, who so loved the world, sent his son. He had sent his prophets day after day, again and again. And then he sent his son, his one and only son, Jesus, whom lived a perfect human life and so opened the way to be the fulfilling sacrifice for the punishment of sin. And through his rising from the dead, we know that his death was more than sufficient to free all from that proper penalty, so that all whom willingly come to the loving arms of God and seek forgiveness there will receive it. And so there is a choice. It's a choice that many of you know. A choice to continue living under your own authority and doing what works best for you. But be aware that the Bible says you face judgment unprepared. Or you choose to live Jesus' way and to be right with God now and through eternity. Friends, make a wise choice. This is a real choice. And if it's something that today you're realizing that for you this is where you're at, that you've never made that choice, please don't leave here without talking to someone about it. Someone you trust, someone who can help. Come and talk to myself if you need to. Friends, do business with God today. Do not be under his judgment unprepared. But look, I know that many here, like myself, we have chosen to accept that wonderful gift, that gift of forgiveness, and we've committed to live out life Jesus' way. It's a decision that I've never regretted. But the daily demands of that decision are far from easy. I don't want you to go away thinking that this is an easy decision to make. Through the passage we've looked at, and this slide is deliberately busy to show you how many encouragements and inducements there are about getting our lifestyle right as we aim to worship God daily with how we live. We're called on to deal with each other justly. We're called on not to oppress the vulnerable. Does that affect the way we shop? Does it affect the way we think about life as we're out and about getting ahead in the world? And then the things that are familiar to us, perhaps from the Ten Commandments: do not murder, do not put your trust elsewhere, do not steal, do not commit adultery. And we remember where Jesus picks these things up and he takes them further as he talks about them. He says it's not just about murder, it's about not getting angry and staying angry with those around you. It's not just about not committing adultery, it's about not looking lustfully. It's about being pure for God and holy. Do not lie. And then as we read, obey me, and I will be your God, and you will be my people. And friends, for those of us who have chosen to live Jesus' way, these calls are still there upon our lives. We need to reflect on them and remember them. Whether it's here in this passage as you read it again, whether it is the Ten Commandments or the Sermon on the Mount recorded in Matthew chapter 5, or whether it's reading the early church apostles and James, who says, so you've chosen to live Jesus' way, now prove it. Prove it with the way that you live. My prayer today is that God's indwelling Spirit will go on challenging us in those areas that need to change. But the hope, the good news, that when we fail, because we do, we fail day after day, again and again, may we know the Father's love as he hears our cry to him and he forgives us, because he's done all that for us through Jesus. And it just requires us to come to him and say, yes, God, make me right with you. perhaps the true summary is this that comes a bit later on in Jeremiah. For I know the plans I have for you, plans for your welfare and not for harm, to give you a future with hope. The opportunity is there, friends. Don't let it pass.